BBC headlines take us up to 6 minutes past 8 o'clock here at Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about concerns over air quality in Longmont as a result of oil and gas activity in East Boulder County and Weld County. A large crowd assembled in Longmont last night to hear the results of air monitoring that's happening at Boulder Reservoir. But we'll hear from a Longmont City Council member about what they're planning on doing regarding air quality. Then, a new programme is being launched this evening, asking Colorado companies to take a test that will measure and improve their social and environmental impact. If they qualify, they can then get a Best for Colorado certification. We'll get the latest cannabis news with Leland Rucker. Then John Lendorf will be live in the studio with Radio Nibbles. After headlines from the BBC, it's time once again to dip into the KGNU archives. And today we'll bring you another Destination Freedom radio play produced by our own Donny Betts. This morning we'll bring you Education of a Harvard Guy. It's the story of civil rights leader John Perdue, who decided to leave Harvard and risk everything to join the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. At 9:30, we'll start another morning of music on the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, the latest local headlines. Here's Hannah Lee Myers.
The Boulder County Commissioners are asking the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, or COGCC, to reject or suspend submitted applications for local oil and gas drilling sites until the lawsuit over fracking in Boulder County is resolved. The applications are for COGCC permits, but any drilling proposals also require local approval under Boulder County regulations. In September, Boulder County filed a lawsuit against Cresto and Peak Resources over the company's push to construct 110 fracking sites in Boulder County, citing health concerns, lack of planning, and the possible violation of the terms of conservation easements. In response to that lawsuit, the COGCC indefinitely postponed a hearing on Crestone's drilling proposal until after the suit is resolved. Regardless of that COGCC decision, Crestone is moving forward with applications to the state for drilling sites in Boulder, saying they want to be ready for seamlessly begin fracking work in Boulder if Boulder loses the lawsuit and their proposal is ultimately approved. If the COGCC proceeds with the applications, Boulder County leadership says they will request a public hearing on the issue. On Wednesday, the Boulder County Land Use presented to the County Planning Board their proposed changes to codes pertaining to local food production. Rod Bruski has more.
The changes were presented yesterday were the result of nearly a year-long process that involved local small-scale farmers and local food sustainability advocates. Their proposals includes incremental changes to the land use code, but in their draft contained items like height restrictions on hoop houses when the average height of these structures is 3 feet taller than the 12-foot limit proposed. Also in their draft, it appears that they are increasing regulations on farms that are on Boulder County conservation agreements. For KG, the county commissioners will vote on these regulations in January. For KGNU, I'm Rod Bruski.
A federal grand jury in New Jersey yesterday indicted two Iranian men in connection with a widespread computer hacking and extortion scheme that affected major computer systems across the United States and Canada, including the Colorado Department of Transportation. The Denver Post reports that the two men launched their scheme in December 2015 to hold large computer systems hostage until owners paid a ransom to have their malicious software removed. In February, the hackers were able to gain access to CDOT's computer network. They tried to extort a ransom from CDOT to de-encrypt their files. While Colorado did not pay the ransom, the incident did cost the state an estimated $1.5 million. Expect a high today around 51 degrees under partly sunny skies. We are expected to have an overnight low around 29. Temperatures will gradually drop to highs around 30 over the weekend with a chance for snow tomorrow. It's currently around 34 degrees on the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
It's 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Last night in Longmont, Dr. Detlev Helmig presented his findings from an ongoing air quality study that's taking place at Boulder Reservoir. There was a packed community room at the Front Range Community College. Well, the public forum had been the brainchild of Longmont City Council member Joan Peck, and it was organised in conjunction with the Longmont Public Forum.
We had an issue on City Council that we were voting on. I'm on the Longmont City Council. And one of the things that I was very concerned about was air quality and fracking underneath our reservoir. After the meeting, a gentleman from the audience, a new resident actually in Longmont, said that he was as concerned as well as I was, and that wanted to know if I knew that the air monitoring that was being done at the Boulder Reservoir, their grant was running out. And were we interested in Longmont to do something? So, of course, I am. So he contacted the gentleman, Dr. Detlev Helmig, and asked if he would meet. So over the summer, through emails, etc., we got together and finally got this meeting that we had tonight. I contacted the association, the Longmont Public Forum, and asked if they would be interested in sponsoring it, because it really can't be a city event. And I am here not as a representative of the city or of the city council, but as myself, as a resident who is very interested in air quality.
Well, in terms of moving forward then and monitoring air quality, what Dr. Helmig was saying, it's a very extensive data set and a really comprehensive data set that they're getting at the Boulder Reservoir. But that takes a big investment. And it sounds like Boulder County will step in to prolong that study at least until 2019. To start a new study, certainly anything comparable, is going to take a lot of money. So what can, say, the city of Longmont do given all the budgetary realities and requirements?
So council gave direction to the city of Longmont staff to purchase some air monitoring equipment, basically based upon our quality and being so close to Weld County. I don't know at this time what the quality of that monitoring system is going to be or who's going to be reading the data. So if the data is good as far as telling us how much ethane is in the air, how the ozone is being affected, then what I have asked the group that is here tonight, what do you want to do with that data? This is your city. Tell us what you want to do. And as residents, we can take that data to the state legislature and hopefully get COGCC to do their job. They are, in their rules and regulations, in their vision statement, they're supposed to be monitoring this.
Well, there is another public forum that's going to be happening in the new year in January at the public library. Right. What is that about and what are some of the details?
That is going to be about health effects, and I'm hoping that this group, the ones that are interested, will come back with some ideas of what they want to do with this data. What is the next step, if there is a next step at all?
And it does seem that the next steps aren't incredibly obvious, given that Longmont has taken many steps and has been stopped by the current state law and the state legislature's lack of action and various other things. I mean, for you, and I know you are serving on City Council, in a city where the majority of residents voted for a ban on fracking that was subsequently overturned by the state Supreme Court.
Right.
I mean, what is that like for you as somebody who's trying to enact legislation and trying to enact regulation for the better of everybody who lives in the city, mm-hmm. to have those roadblocks put up?
It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating to know that part of the mandate or the reason that you want to do service, be in service for the city, is that you're stonewalled everywhere. So it really does have to start with our legislature and the COGCC. And I'm hoping, since we have a different legislative body and a different governor, that we can make better inroads.
Longmont City Council member Joan Pegg. Well, that meeting that is going to be happening in January is on the health effects of fracking, and it happens Wednesday, January 23rd from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. That will be at the Longmont Public Library in their community room. And we'll have more coverage of that in advance of that meeting. And you can hear the interview that we broadcast yesterday morning with Dr. Detlev Helmig about that air quality monitoring that is currently taking place at Boulder Reservoir. That is online at news.kgnu.org. This evening in Denver, the Alliance Centre will host a launch party for a new programme that allows companies in Colorado, no matter their size, to measure and improve their social environmental impact. They can then qualify for a Best for Colorado certification. Brenna St. Ange of the Alliance Centre says that Best for Colorado is based on the B Corp system.
So the B Corp movement really is an international movement for companies who want to use their force for good. The whole premise is that businesses can exist beyond just profit, that businesses can have values and missions beyond just padding the pockets of the wealthy, that businesses really can be a powerful force in contributing to the good of communities and the health of the environment. So B Corps are actually the way that businesses can go about quantifying that, and it's a certification program for private sector companies and or publicly traded companies. And there's actually a logo recognition when you're shopping. I encourage you all to check it out. It's a black B in a black circle. And if you're seeing that on your products or the companies that you're supporting, that means that they are a certified B Corp, that they have been certified across the four impact areas of good governance, good workforce treatment and practices, community involvement and giving back through philanthropic efforts, volunteerism and whatnot, as well as reducing their environmental impact. And one of the really strong points about this framework is that it is very comprehensive, where some frameworks, you know, even like the LEED certification we have for our building, is very powerful, but it only assesses the building itself, not really the behavior or the people within it. And so there are a lot of measurement frameworks out there that really kind of compartmentalize the impact of whatever is being assessed. And the power of the B Corp movement is that it actually puts it all together and takes a very broad view of what are the impact of our companies and how do we help them improve to increase their positive impacts like philanthropy and volunteerism, and decrease their negative impacts like waste and energy consumption. And, you know, I'm just giving you very simple examples there. So the B Corp framework actually has a very robust certification process that companies go through. They fill out an assessment, they get scored out of points of 200, and then they have to get third-party certified through B Lab. And Best for Colorado is a gateway. And it doesn't mean that you have to become B Corp certified if you're interested in Best for Colorado, but it really is a more tangible, easy, accessible framework for companies who just want to get started. And it measures impact across those same four areas of governance, workforce, community, and environment, but it does so in a much more entry-level way where, you know, when I took the assessment for the Alliance just to go through it, I think it took me 40 minutes and I was done. So it's not, you know, hours or months. It's not a huge financial investment, but it does have a lot of benefit to offer the companies as a baseline for performance and a roadmap for how to increase their positive impact of all walks of life and anywhere in their impact journey to participate.
And to give us a sense, say a couple of examples of questions that for you when you were getting the Alliance Centre certified, what kind of questions are asked of companies so that they can get this registration?
So I'll provide kind of an example in each of the different areas. So under the good governance section, it will look for kind of checks and balances for the way that your organization's policies and procedures are set up, you know, your governing board of directors, your conflict of interest statements, discrimination, you know, those kind of base level good governance structures. And then when you're looking at kind of workforce, it will look at, you know, what is your parental or maternity leave policy? Do you pay living wages to your workers? Do you even know what a living wage is in your area? When we look at community involvement, it will look at do you have a community giving program set up or a volunteerism program set up? How is your company really making an impact in your local community? Are you involved in your local community? Of course, these are general questions and not verbatim what's on the assessment. I'm just kind of giving you some themes. And then when we look at the environmental area, it will really take a pretty broad broad overview of the environmental impact of the company, looking at energy usage, water usage, waste usage, hazardous materials, you know, really the whole gamut of the environmental impact for a company. So again, it's really broad, and that's part of the strength of this framework is that it's accessible, it's quick, and it's comprehensive.
Brenna St. Ange of the Alliance Center. They are hosting the Best for Colorado program launch party. It's this afternoon at 5:30 p.m. and Governor-elect Jared Polis will actually be there. Now, you can find out more about tonight's event and also the hundreds of other events that the Alliance Center hosts at their WinCoop in Lodo, Denver. That's online at thealliancecenter.org. Leland Rucker is the senior editor at Sensi Magazine, and he joins us on Thursday mornings to talk about the latest news in cannabis. Leland has just returned from the Marijuana Business Conference and Expo that happened recently in Las Vegas. And what did you discover?
You know, this is my second time. I was there last year, too. It's known in the industry as MJ BizCon. That's what everybody calls it. It's the largest cannabis convention in the world. It's the week before Thanksgiving, and there was approximately 25,000 people there. It was just amazing. 17,000 last year. It was almost twice as large in size as last year. There was about two football fields that included 44 aisles, more than 1,000 booths, displays, gear, and all these people, investors, owners, legislators, researchers, techies.
Were Colorado businesses and legislators there, given that, you know, not that long ago, Colorado was the only game in town, certainly around recreational cannabis. Now, of course, it's joined by many other states. What was the Colorado component?
You know, I tried to find Colorado businesses, and it was difficult. The 44 aisles of just of booths and, you know, people and, you know, new companies. And I'm sure that, you know, by next year, a lot of those companies will be gone, but they'll be there. There'll be others to replace them just like there were this year.
And that's just the nature of the business.
Yeah, yeah. So I found some cannabis companies from Colorado, some of the ones that I'm familiar with, but it was so enormous. And you're right, there's so many states signing on now and other states that it's just going to continue to get bigger.
What were the biggest takeaways you got from us?
You know, one of the interesting things that happened was that, and this was rumored at the convention, that people were being stopped at the Canadian border because they were coming to the convention. And
being stopped by the U.S. Customs, given that Canada has completely legalized cannabis.
Correct. That's and I bring this up because I took a vaporizer with me and I put it in my luggage when I went there. And when I came back, somebody had gifted me an eighth of bud marijuana from California. So I just put that in my baggage. Didn't even think at all about it. You know, that's just kind of a normal thing. It's between two states where it's legal, but between two countries, that could change. And there was actually someone who was detained at the border. He said that he was attending the convention and that he had invested in a company, a Canadian company that had an operation in Nevada, and he was denied entry. In fact, he was denied complete entry into the U.S. forever. So he's going to have to go if he wants to come back in the U.S., he's going to have to go through that process. And basically, if you go to the border and you mention to authorities that you have something to do with the cannabis business, they consider that a federal offense. And so they can deny people from going in. A bunch of other people were detained, but they weren't actually stopped. They were allowed to go in after they mentioned, I don't know what they mentioned actually, but some people were allowed to go in. Some people were told ahead of time, executives and such, to fly to San Diego or Los Angeles and then drive to Las Vegas so that they wouldn't have to lie to authorities at the border. That's the thing. Most people don't want to lie at the border about what they're doing. They want to be honest about it. And if you're honest about it, they might not allow you through.
I wonder what would happen if you were in a border state and if that state had legalized cannabis. Because you're still, I suppose, dealing with federal agents.
Well, that's happening in Washington. The state of Washington is right up against the border there. And again, it just shows the amazing disparity in the way laws are being created and used about cannabis. You know, here's the United States, a very large country with most of the states having medical cannabis of some kind, and a lot of states that have legalized it, and yet they're stopping people at the border in a country where it is legal. This just shows the amazing disparity in the laws that we've created, in the laws that we're trying to change. And I think it's a good thing for Colorado to remember that after 5 years, we're still not doing too bad here.
People can read more about Leland Rooker's adventures at MJBizCon. Just go to sensimag.com and you can catch the hard copy at newsstands around the Front Range. Thanks, Leland.
Thank you.
And it's time now for Radio Nibbles.
Hannah, Travis, Salami, Tommy. You with the gravy, Davy. Everybody.
And everybody eats on Thursday mornings because John Lendorf is joining us live in the studio. Good morning. Happy post-Thanksgiving. We had a wonderful show last Thursday morning, you answering various different questions from listeners about their Thanksgiving meal. Ultimately, did you enjoy your feast?
It was a wonderful feast. It really was good and very high quality leftovers, I have to say, still remaining.
Well, there's lots more food news to talk about this week. And I know in your Nibbles column this week, you're talking about Boulder's Center of Culinary Gravity that's actually shifting eastwards.
Yeah, I really think it is, in part because it's expensive in Boulder. And one sign of that, or one place where you can see it, is going to be in Longmont. Clearly, the biggest event this weekend is the Winter Market at the Boulder County Fairgrounds in Longmont. And this is the 12th annual. This is the last, it's the last gig of the season for Boulder County's farmers.
Stuck up on your locally grown gourds and other winter delights.
Yeah, and it's an amazing sight to see this huge building full of farmers' stands. There's still a lot available in terms of fruit and vegetables. And, you know, we've talked a lot on KGNU about, you know, being genuine and real about supporting local agriculture. This is the clearest way you can do it.
Well, the rubber can meet the road for you if you choose to go to the Boulder County Farmers Market. It's the winter market. This is the 12th year it's been going on, and I've gone to many of them. And it's a wonderful event because there's crafts for kids. There's all kinds of events happening. You can get your knives sharpened.
Right, and it's a great place to do your Christmas shopping because you can pick up honey and various kinds of jams and all kinds of food-related gifts. When you stand in the middle of that huge hall, as I'm sure you know you have, you're stunned by the immensity of the food business around here. And also it makes you think, what if there was a place like this that was open all the time where all of these people could sell their wonderful stuff from here?
You know, I mean, do you think there's space for that? Obviously, there's an appetite for this and in many different versions of that word appetite. A lot of people are very much into supporting local agriculture. Yeah. But as you said, in winter, we only have this opportunity, really, for the farmers market.
Right. And I think that when there is a real year-round market, like many cities have, it is not going to be in Boulder.
And is that just real estate costs, parking, accessibility, all the above?
Yeah, I mean, they can put something down at Central Park that would be nice. But the reality of dealing with going down there is very difficult. So I think it'll be out east. And in the rest of my column, I talk about the best of East Boulder County, which was a special section the Boulder Weekly put out. And I really encourage you to pick it up. There's so much happening out in East Boulder and in terms of food and cheese and everything else that's where the cool stuff is happening.
Well, this weekend, it's on Saturday and Sunday, right? It's a two-day event, the Winter farmer's market at the Boulder County Fairgrounds. There's plenty of parking for anyone who's concerned.
And you could just go out for lunch, you know. All the usual folks will be there.
Well, I'll be there too, and I'm sure you will too, John. But in terms of, apart from your Thanksgiving Day feast, what was the best thing you've tasted lately?
I was down in Westminster teaching a writing class at Front Range College, and we went to the Early Bird Cafe. You know, it sounds like just another breakfast place, but I'll tell you two things about it. It's a great brunch place. Two things. They have maple syrup on the table, a bottle of maple syrup, real maple syrup on the table. That alone, for those of us who understand what that means. It's important.
That's one thing. What's the second thing, very quickly? That's really good.
Bacon-wrapped dates is a side dish.
That's the Early Bird Restaurant in Westminster. Well, you can read John's column in the Boulder Weekly. Listen to archived Radio Nibble shows at news.kgnu.org. Maybe see you at the farmer's market this weekend.
Bon appetit.
You gotta eat if it chokes you. Oh, do have a knish, knish ya. Ask him the latke, matke.